Yeah. Maybe it's a different, maybe we got the wrong group. I don't know. That was weird. That was very strange. Yeah. I didn't get it either.
Oh, that's weird.
That does explain it. That's very different.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Lyra Schimmel. I represent the Missouri Public Service Commission. If I could just have a moment to store some things. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. The issue that we bring before this court is whether FERC failed to properly address an acquisition premium issue in a proceeding under Section 7 of the Natural Gas Act. In this Section 7 case, two previously intrastate pipelines were connected with a FERC-regulated interstate pipeline, which combined the pipelines in a merger case to form a single FERC-regulated pipeline. FERC originally granted a certificate of convenience and necessity to the interstate section of the pipeline, which I'll refer to as Missouri Interstate, in 2002. The merger case was filed in 2006, and these are the orders on appeal here. It was an abuse of discretion for FERC to refuse to address the acquisition premium on the interstate portion of the pipelines in establishing initial rates for the merged pipeline, in light of FERC's obligation to ensure that rates are not excessive and are in the public interest. As this court has repeatedly found, FERC's failure to respond meaningfully to facially valid issues renders its order arbitrary and capricious. This court should vacate the order and remand to FERC to actually engage in a careful scrutiny of the issue and make a reasonable response to the evidence presented, as this court has found in Missouri 1, in which Judge Edwards was the chief judge and Judge Henderson, you were the author, and Missouri 2, which you authored, Judge Garland. There is no dispute that FERC's general rate-making policy is to exclude acquisition premiums from rate base.
Can I ask you,
of course,
and maybe this isn't a problem, but the 2002 order is not before us.
That is correct.
And that is the one, is it not, where in which FERC said, we're going to kick this down the way or whatever, and you'll have your chance later. And then is that the one that was mooted?
Yes, Judge. They said, well, we'll just hold off until they find their till they file their cost study with this court. And in 2006, RPO 6274, the applicants filed their cost study. But then about 4 months later, they filed their certificate case to merge the pipelines. And it was then in that case where FERC said, well, the cost study now, we don't have to look at that anymore because we have a new situation. The merged pipelines don't have any operating history, so we don't have to look at it in the 274 case.
Okay, then my question is, and maybe this isn't a problem, but if we send it back, how do we resurrect this 2002 order, or do we have to?
You do not have to. We are asking the court to look at the period that the initial rates went into effect, which I believe was June 2008, up through the date that the Section 4 rates went into effect subject to refund. So that was January 1, 2010.
Because you're saying that those interim rates have embedded acquisition premiums?
That's what I'm saying, Your Honor. And what I'm saying is that FERC failed to consider that issue when it should have.
They did as to two, but not one. They did as to two of the...
Absolutely right. That was fairly contradictory in that they said, okay, we've got acquisition premiums on these two intrastate pieces, and we generally remove those from rate base. And then they refused to look at it on the interstate portion.
Can I ask them? They seem to have a rule that says when it's the first time and when there's substantial benefits. That's the exception to their rule against acquisition, right?
That's correct.
And that's for Section 7, right?
It applies in Section 7, yes.
And is that, do you challenge that as an appropriate rule for Section 7?
Well, let me say, Judge, that FERC has a general policy that it applies the same rate-making principles.
I got that part. I still
okay.
Answer my question.
In Section 7 as in Section 4.
Is that exception, if it satisfies those two principles, I take it they allow it in the Section 7 proceeding, right?
They could. What they didn't do was look to see if it did satisfy.
And is that all that's required? That is, you're not challenging that that's enough in a Section 7?
No, we're saying that what they needed to do in the Section 7 case was actually look at whether or not there was an acquisition premium, and then secondly decide if there were commensurate benefits for the excessive amount paid. So if they found an excessive amount, then under the Longhorn Partners policy, the exception to the rule for inclusion of acquisition premiums, they needed to find that customers received benefits commensurate with that excessive amount paid. Now, if FERC...
That's different than what would normally be done in Section 4 proceeding.
No, I think that's, that the rate-making policy for inclusion of an acquisition premium is the same.
So you're saying that the substantial benefits part is no different than the Section 4. So you're saying there really is no exception. Is your position there is no exception in Section 7 proceedings, that they always have to apply the same thing in Section 7 as they would in Section 4?
Well, I'm saying that FERC has said that it applies the same rate-making policies.
I understand that. I'm trying to figure out what the difference between a rate-making policy and the actual rate-making. So is your, and I don't know what the answer is. I'm just trying to get your understanding of this. Is your position that in Section 7 they have to do exactly what they would do in Section 4 with respect to the acquisition premium?
With respect to the acquisition premium for these reasons?
The answer is yes, sir.
The answer is yes, for these reasons. It is a policy, and they say they apply the same policies. And it is also, in Section 7, they're allowed some flexibility because operating costs may not be known. If this is dedicated to public use for the first time, then the operating costs are not known. But the original cost of the pipeline is known. It's established at that time. So there's no need to speculate. There's no need for additional information. So they are able to apply that policy.
So this is getting somewhere. Help me with what's the difference then in your view between Section 7 and Section 4?
I agree with this court's analysis that Section 7 is in the public interest.
I know, but what does that mean? What's the difference between that? What tests do you think are applied in Section 4 that aren't applied in Section 7?
It is just and reasonable, of course, for Section 4. And in that instance, they should have better information. I think the reason that Section 7 is a lower standard is that there may not be sufficient information or evidence, for example, an operating cost to actually set
a rate. So your position is where there is the same information, the test should be the same.
I mean, that's what FERC says, is it applies the same policies when it can. When it can, and it could in this case, is my...
Okay, let me ask one more question. When, if acquisition costs are approved in Section 7, and then you get to the Section 4 proceeding, can they be removed going forward?
I would say that if FERC has gone through the entire analysis that you required in Missouri 1 and Missouri 2, that is, give it a most careful scrutiny and reasonably respond to evidence that it should be included.
So you would say that what was done, though, in 2002 didn't meet that test, right?
Absolutely not.
Well, is there a res judicata aspect of this? They certainly did approve it in 2002, right?
They did approve in 2002. We did not know. I don't think anyone knew in 2002 that there was, in fact, an acquisition premium. It was committed to use for the first time. But then, when the cost...
Why do you say that? They didn't know there was a... Why do you say that?
Because the applicants didn't admit it.
Right. I see.
They,
so in 2002...
They said, this is our net book value.
I just had net book value, but then you had some testimony later on, or before, or whatever.
We had quite a bit of evidence that, in fact, that was inaccurate and not true.
And wasn't that in the 02? Or...
That came out in the cost and service study in the 06 case, I believe.
Okay.
We did. Now, the municipal commission that was an intervener did raise the issue that there might be an acquisition premium, and they asked.
And what did FERC?
In 2002, they asked.
And what did FERC do?
And FERC deferred it to the cost and service study.
Okay. All right. I'm still hung up on the 2002. What is wrong with this analysis? If we send it back, because as I understand it, you have been saying since at least 2002, you need to consider this acquisition premium and to FERC, and you haven't. The only thing before us are the rates between January 08 and January 10. But doesn't that hinge on the fact that they didn't do it in 2002? And that's why maybe you didn't make it clear enough, or in response to Judge Garland's question, you said they didn't know whether there was an acquisition premium, but you brought it to their attention. You wanted that investigated as far back as 2002.
That's correct. We did ask that it be investigated. Let me say that in 2002, the pipeline was not operational. But we asked that it be investigated, and FERC did not investigate it. I think our point is that they have ignored this issue over a long period of time.
Right.
And that's why it's important that it goes back to 2002, because in Missouri, too, you actually found their order to be arbitrary and capricious and vacated it because they'd had two shots at it, and they hadn't responded with valid arguments in their two attempts. Our point here is that they had the opportunity in 2002 to take this out or to look at it.
Responsibility.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely, a responsibility.
All right, go ahead. What was the rest of you were going to say? I cut you off.
Since they had the opportunity to do it then and they didn't do it, then they again had the opportunity in the cost and service study and didn't do it, and then again they didn't have the opportunity. Or they did have the opportunity and didn't take that opportunity in the case before this court.
All right.
Just one more. What happened in 2010 in the Section 4 proceeding?
The Section 4 proceeding in 2010, the rates went into effect interim subject to refund. So
that's going on now?
That in the locked-in period for the Section 7 rates. So it is going on now, correct?
Right. And you're attacking the inclusion of the acquisition premium
in the initial rates. That's correct.
Okay, but all the most you can get is between 2008 and 2010, and then obviously if you win the Section 4, you'll get from 2010 on. Right.
That's correct.
Prospectively.
That's correct.
All right.
Thank you,
Ms. Kafer.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Holly Kafer for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I think I should start first with what the Commission's orders in this case did do, and that is they did consider the merits of whether to include the full purchase price of the Missouri Interstate facilities in the rate base for the new entity, MoGas. And that's in paragraph 55 of the rehearing order, JA 296 to 297. Where the Commission, relying on the 2002 order, said because these facilities are being dedicated to gas service for the first time, we will allow them to be included in rate base.
But that's not the full test, is it?
The full test that the Commission would traditionally apply in a Section 4 case.
Oh, in a Section 7.
In a Section 7 case.
That is,
in a Section 7 case, the Commission applies its Section 4 rate-making policies to the extent practicable,
What I mean is, with respect to this first-time exception, isn't it? Aren't there two elements to it? It has to be first time, and there has to be substantial benefits.
There have to be measurable benefits, and the Commission has also looked at whether there are affiliates involved in the transaction.
So I don't see those words, measurable benefits, in paragraph 55.
That's right. The Commission did not go into that detailed consideration, quantification of benefits in this Section 7 case, although
they didn't
use
the policy that they said applies.
They didn't
analyze it pursuant to their own policy.
That's the policy that the commission would apply in a Section 4 case. And as this commission held...
Section 7. These are the tests, as I understood and read it. This would be applicable in this situation. And they're kind of bouncing around. The only thing they don't do, they say, well, it's moot, or we've got the 8, or this is merged now, which makes no sense. I didn't even know what they were talking about. But all they've done is try and skip away from it. The one thing they didn't do was to apply the policy, which they said exists.
I suppose we should step back and say, first, the commission has not found that this is actually an acquisition premium to which that a policy would apply.
Anything. They haven't found anything.
What they did find is that the facilities are being newly committed to gas service.
Well, Council, what I'm trying to suggest is, based on my reading of this, they haven't gone through any analysis to address this question. You're doing it after the fact because that's the best you can do. I look for what they did, and they didn't do it. They didn't analyze the problem and say, we hear what they're arguing. Using our existing policies, either there are no acquisition premiums here, or applying the test, they fail, or whatever. They didn't do that.
The commission, I think, felt that it did not need to get into the question of whether it is an acquisition premium, because what it found is that, as it did in 2002, the facilities were being newly committed to gas service, and there were no affiliates involved in the transaction. And those are two of the factors that the commission has traditionally looked at, whether in Section 4 or in Section 7.
I just want to be sure I understand what the commission's law is with respect to Section 7 and acquisition premiums. Just Section 7. Am I wrong? I thought the rule was first time plus measurable benefits. Is that right or wrong?
The commission has only, to the extent of my research and also petitioners, I believe, examined an acquisition premium using that standard in one Section 7 case that we found. And that's referred to in all of the briefs.
I thought Rio Grande and Enbridge, that those aren't the tests in those two cases?
Those are Section 4 cases.
Okay. So Section 7, we don't know what their rule is.
I suppose that's right, Your Honor, yes.
Are you really saying that? We don't know what the rule is in 7?
We know the rule that is generally applicable to an acquisition premium. In this case, we don't know whether we have an acquisition premium.
That's something they could have analyzed. You can't do it after the fact. They could have done that if that was the analysis.
The commission has the discretion to go into a more detailed level of analysis.
No, the commission under APA law must give us reasoned decision-making. You can't, you may be stuck, but you can't come to the court and say, well, but they have discretion, and they figured, don't bother with this, blow it off, don't talk about it, so the court won't know what we've done. And then you go say, well, if we had exercised discretion, we could have found there was no acquisition premium. That makes no sense. That doesn't work.
I think the commission has a certain amount of discretion in to what extent it applies Section 4.
They don't have any discretion not to explain to us what they've done. Not if they're going to be reviewed.
If you look at JA 296 to 297, paragraph 55, the commission states that it responded to a similar allegation in the 2002 case and that it would allow the inclusion of the full purchase price, quote, because the facilities will be devoted to gas utility service for the first time. So it's quite clear that in this case, and reflecting the analysis in the 2002 decision. Pardon me?
I thought they asked for a study.
In the 2002 case, the commission allowed the inclusion temporarily, as it's done here, and required, as it always does, a filing of a cost and revenue study within 3 years.
To understand what was going on here.
Exactly.
It turned out people weren't telling the complete truth.
Well, we don't know that, as
okay,
I said.
Well,
there's
that was
been...
clearly a question. My point is then all of a sudden it got mooted, so the question never got answered.
That's correct, because the parties or the pipeline merged, which is something that was out of the commission's control, of course.
I understand, but that doesn't mean we lose the question. The other side has raised the question from the outset, and you just said exactly what I read. The commission said, well, let's do this temporary, we'll get a study, we'll think about it, and all of a sudden some things occur, and the commission then ends up saying, well, as to two of these entities, we're not going to allow it. As to the third one, we're just not going to say anything.
As to the third one, we can talk about what paragraph 55 means, I guess. And I would point out, though, that there are relevant distinctions between the Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas acquisition premiums and the so-called Missouri Interstate acquisition premium. First of all, as to Missouri Gas and Missouri Pipeline, there's no dispute about the existence.
Excuse me, I'm not interrupting. I want to make sure what you're saying. You are now repeating for my edification what the analysis is that the commission gave. This is all somewhere to be found.
The commission,
they went through this analysis distinguishing these three entities to show why you worry about acquisition premium for two but not three?
No, they did not. Exactly. I'm doing this in response to arguments that were presented on brief.
Your response to us has to be within the context of what the commission said, not your surmise.
I understand. And so then we'll go back to, I believe it's, pardon me for 1 second. Paragraph 54, JA 175 of the certificate order states that at page 6 of applicant's exhibit S indicates there's an acquisition adjustment of certain amounts for Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas. If you refer to that exhibit S, you'll see that indeed there are acquisition adjustments specifically listed using that term for Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas and not for Missouri Interstate. MoGas, the merged entity, has clearly disputed the existence of an acquisition premium in this case. So I'll state again that there's no agreement that there is, in fact, an acquisition premium in this case, which calls into question then whether and to what extent the commission might apply the usual standard that's applied in a Section 4 case applicable to acquisition premiums.
Can I ask, I have a couple of questions here. So is the commission's position that whenever there's an acquisition premium and whenever it's the first time, it's okay in Section 7? Is that your rule?
No, that's certainly not the commission's rule. The commission does an analysis to find a rate that's within the public interest. That's not always going to be the same thing as a just and reasonable rate. The commission doesn't apply the same exact standard.
What standard are they going to apply to an acquisition that's for the first time?
Well, in this case, they looked at whether there were affiliates involved in the transaction and whether the facility was being committed to a new use.
No, and that's the same thing as the first time, right?
Right.
Right. I'm asking you, so assume it's agreed it's the first time, which it's agreed here. What else is in the commission's test for approval of an acquisition premium besides that it be in the first?
In Section 4 cases.
In Section 7 cases.
Right. There's only one Section 7 case that addressed an acquisition premium in detail. And in that case, I believe the commission relied upon the fact that there were affiliates involved in all, if not some,
so
of the transactions.
You're saying that the commission's position is, as indicated in paragraph 55, that as long as it's for the first time and as long as it's between non-affiliateds, that's it. We're going to allow it to go forward.
That's not the test the commission has stated. In the 2007 order, in this case, the commission says the pipeline has the burden of establishing the dollar amount of the benefits alleged to have been conferred upon consumers. It's provided no evidence to support of the benefits of the acquisition premium, and so we're knocking it out. That's the understood test.
And if that's the
understood test applied, doesn't matter whether it was intra or interstate, that's the test with respect to acquisition premiums that you're saying is kind of a mystery in Section 7. It's not a mystery.
It's not a mystery, you're right. But what the commission does in Section 7 cases is apply that test, we'll call it a three-factor test,
right, to
the extent practicable. And what it found here in paragraphs 53 and 54 of the rehearing order, JA 296 in particular, is that it was not going to turn this certificate proceeding into a rate proceeding.
That moves to the next question. So where does it say that it would be? I understand it's not practicable to have a complete rate proceeding. But where do they say why it's not practicable to determine whether there is a premium above the depreciated book value?
In this case.
Where do they make that? That is the point that I take it you're making. I'm just trying to figure out where have they met that aspect of the test. They just says we don't. They say we don't want to have a complete proceeding. I understand that, but with respect to acquisition premium, why don't they evaluate that?
In paragraph 54, the commission states that, quote, in order to test the validity of the information in the cost and revenue study, which is the information relating to the acquisition premium, this is the section of the orders addressing acquisition premium, we would have to turn this certificate into a rate proceeding. We will not do that.
Question, Maya, I'm just saying, you know more about this than I do. What I'm asking is why, this is really a accounting question. Why, it seems like, there's an acquisition premium, like goodwill or something else, that's above what looks like the depreciated book value. Why? What kind of test? Why do you need? I understand why you need it for a lot of other elements of rate making, but why for acquisition premium do you need it?
I think
why,
the commission,
especially when they did it for MoGas, MPC, they stated it summarily. It's easy to do, and then they didn't say, but it's different as to this third entity.
Right. For Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas, remember that there was no dispute about the existence of the acquisition premium. And to answer Judge Garland's question, the commission, and I think this is reflected in paragraph 54, found that, in fact, they would have to understand the operating history of the merged pipeline, the new entity that was created as a result of this proceeding, in order to analyze the acquisition premium. Because while the identification of an acquisition premium might be an accounting issue, the consideration of whether the exception applies in order to allow it to be included in rate base requires looking at things like, as the commission found in paragraph 54, the operating history, because the test that the commission usually applies to, in Section 4 cases, to an acquisition premium includes whether there is a measurable benefit to the public. And that could require, and I think this is what the commission is saying in paragraph 54, where it says that it needs to look at the MoGas operating history after 18 months, understanding the operating history could go directly to whether there are measurable benefits to the new facility.
Right. So why isn't, I understand your point about the other two, that is Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas, they were identified. Okay, but now you're saying there's a second step. A, you have to identify, and B, you have to make measurable benefits. How was the commission able to say that there were no measurable benefits for those two? It seems like all the commission said with respect to those two was, there's an identified acquisition premium, and we're striking it down. How were they able to do this study
right,
that you're talking
because
about?
Because the applicants did not come forward with any additional evidence to support the acquisition premiums, the undisputed acquisition premiums for Missouri Pipeline and Missouri Gas. This is where the commission's reliance on the 2002 Missouri Interstate Certificate Order is key, and that is that in that case, if you look at Addendum B to the Commission's brief in this case, that's the 2002 Missouri Interstate Certificate Order, the Commission discusses the evidence put forward by both Missouri Interstate and by the party that protested the acquisition adjustment in that case, which was not Missouri Commission, but rather a group of municipalities who are interveners here. And in that case, Missouri Interstate then a single entity, represented that the acquisition cost is the depreciated net book value of those assets at the time of the sale by Utilicorp to Missouri Interstate. And so the commission, and it goes on, the commission had evidence there to, or at least the assertions of the party, to make the finding that it was being put to a new use.
So your argument is the difference here is, one, we don't have it identified yet, even. That is, we don't have agreed identification.
There's no agreement or finding.
And unlike with respect to the other two, where there was no, where the pipeline was not claiming, had provided no evidence of a benefit, here they were going to contest that?
Exactly. Yes, the pipeline did contest the existence of the acquisition premium, and I'm not sure, I can't recall, I'd have to go back and look at their protest to see whether they went so far as to contest the benefits.
Because my recollection is that they submitted evidence in the Section 7 proceeding indicating that there was testimony before their agency, indicating that it was conceded that there was an acquisition premium embedded in book value?
That is my understanding of the evidence that the Missouri Commission presented in this case. It wasn't before the Commission in the 2002 case, but I should point out...
That's not the point. We're talking about what the Commission had for before it in this case that somehow causes them to do something different with respect to one of three entities, and I don't see it. Because the contending parties here submitted evidence that was not in any way addressed by the Commission, where a principal player said... conceded. There was something wrong that was done in 2002. He was essentially conceded that the acquisition premium was embedded in the net value.
I think if you read that testimony, it is an admission that there's an acquisition premium,
yes,
but it doesn't then go through the Commission's analysis about whether
there's an exception.
Well,
the Commission has to do that once it has the same evidence that it has as the other two. They now have an admission that there is an acquisition premium embedded. They now have to address it.
As I mentioned a moment ago, the Missouri Commission's testimony that they put forward in this case, I did just want to give the court the information that testimony was filed on October 9th, 2001. The Commission's 2002 decision on this issue that we're relying on here was issued September 24th, 2002. So that testimony was actually available to them in the 2002 proceeding.
No, and they didn't do anything in 2002.
They didn't raise it.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, one more question. This Kansas Pipeline Company case, FERC's decision, is that a Section 7 or a Section 4?
I think there's more than one Kansas Pipeline case.
I'm looking at 81 FERC, paragraph 61005, which is decided October 3rd, 97. It's a Section 7.
That is a Section 7 case. Yes, I'm sorry. That's the one I've been referring to where the Commission did analyze in more detail.
Yes, and they said the Commission has allowed, the rule is that acquisition premium should be disallowed. The Commission has allowed exceptions, but only when the purchaser has demonstrated specific dollar benefits resulting directly from the sale.
Right, and also in that case, though, that case is really quite distinguishable from what we have here for two reasons, and that is, first, that the existence and the amount of the acquisition premium in that case was not the subject of dispute again, and also that transaction involved, and I think this is discussed at page 61018 of that decision, that transaction did involve affiliates, which the Commission found there was no affiliate involvement in this case.
No,
so factually, it is distinguishable.
For my own edification, there is no dispute about the testimony that they offered in the 2000 in the Section 7 proceeding here with respect to the testimony conceding that there were embedded acquisition premiums in that rate. There's no contest. The agency doesn't address it, and no one on the other side said it was wrong. It's uncontested that they were embedded. Uncontested.
The agency did not address it. You're correct, and I don't believe that the pipeline addressed it either.
It's uncontested.
Because they're continuing to contest the existence of an acquisition premium
in the Section 7 proceeding.
It was uncontested, I suppose, before the Missouri Commission.
And it was uncontested when they brought that same information to FERC. It was uncontested.
Even if you find that the existence of the acquisition premium is uncontested, although the Commission did not reach that issue, then you would still need to address whether there is an exception applies here.
Yes.
It did that here by looking at whether there were affiliates involved and whether the facilities were being committed to a new public use, and the Commission believes that that's all that's required by the public interest standard, which this Court and the Commission have obviously held time and time again.
Let me be sure you are committing the Commission to the position that you always can approve acquisition premiums, even when they are clear and not disputed, as long as it's the first time and non-affiliates. You think that is the new FERC rule going forward. Is that right? Because I don't know, that would be inconsistent with the Kansas case. Maybe they could distinguish it, but that would be inconsistent.
It would be inconsistent
is that
what they said in 2007.
Are you sure that that's FERC's rule now?
I'm quite sorry if you think that was what I said.
Giving you a chance.
Okay, thank you very much. No, okay, in this case, we're sticking to the facts of this case, and in this case, the existence of the acquisition premium is disputed.
They didn't say that. FERC, as you pointed out, FERC didn't address that question. FERC didn't give
that as
the reason.
They didn't address whether there is an acquisition premium. All they said was we're going to allow the inclusion of the full purchase price here because it's being committed to a new use and because there are no affiliates involved in the transaction, which is a reflection of the typical test the commission would apply to an acquisition premium in a Section 4.
That's what Judge Garland is trying to suggest to you. It's not a complete. It's like looking in the mirror and having half the mirror dirty.
Well, the commission doesn't feel that it needs to apply precisely the same rate-making policies in a Section 7 case that it did.
They need to say, even though in an order accompanying involving these proceedings where we state the test, as Judge Garland has been stating it, we're going to use a little blurrier version of it with respect to MIG. That makes no sense.
The public interest standard requires less scrutiny than the just and reasonable standard. And by looking at two of the factors that the commission typically addresses with regard to an acquisition premium, the commission felt in its orders that it was satisfying the public interest standard.
So what would happen in the Section 4 proceeding? So they've approved the acquisition premium in Section 7. Now we get to Section 4. What happens next?
The commission stated in paragraph 53, and this is exactly then what happened, is that this issue, or in paragraph 55, I'm sorry, this issue would be ripe for consideration in the Section 4 case and that it could be litigated anew in that case.
And in that case, they might decide that going forward it has to be taken out.
Exactly, yes.
And what would be the grounds? I'm trying to figure out what the difference between Section 7 is and Section 4 in this respect. What would be the test applied during those, or what's going on right now? So what is the test being applied in the Section 4 proceeding?
The Section 4 proceeding that followed this one is currently in the litigation process. So
yes, I understand. That's right.
So there has not been a commission decision yet.
They might apply the whole test in the Section 4.
They might apply. They might give more detailed consideration to.
Guys, I realize you're stuck with what you're stuck with, but they didn't apply. You've agreed, and you're doing the best you can. They didn't apply the whole test here, and so your answer to Judge Garland is, well, they'll probably apply the whole test in Section 4.
I think I have a more basic question, which is, what is the whole test?
The whole test is what you've been stating for half an hour.
The whole test looks at the three factors, which is whether they're being committed to a new public use, whether there are measurable benefits, right, and also the commission has looked at affiliate involvement.
They didn't apply that here.
Here they applied the test only to the extent required by the public interest standard.
And is the measurable benefits, is it the same as you would apply in any just and reasonableness evaluation of anything that they want to put into the rate base?
I believe that it requires some quantification. I've seen some references to specific dollar amounts. Again, that's in the context of Section 4 cases where that issue has come up.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Does Ms. Schimmel have any time left? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes? Is it snowing out in Jefferson City, too?
Yes, ma'am, but nothing compared with here.
What do you say to the point that the difference between the two that were taken out and this one is that those two were conceded, that is, they're on the financial statements, and in this one there's no acquisition premium on the financial statement?
They were conceded. However, there was evidence presented in 2002 and then later in the cost study. There was evidence presented to the court, and they simply didn't look at the evidence. They didn't make a reasonable response to the evidence presented, which is what you have said they must do in a Section 7 case under Missouri 1 and Missouri 2.
What do you say to her argument that this requires, if they're going to do that, this requires essentially making the Section 7 into a Section 4, that this is not just an accounting question, this is a more complicated question?
Well, I would suggest that Section 7, in a sense, is a rate case, and that they are setting initial rates and they're required to do so in the public interest. So just
not that part, but is your view there's no difference at all between Section 7 and Section 4? That is, there's no reason to have a Section 4 proceeding ever because it's totally resolved in Section 7?
No, that's not my point. And we've discussed that a lot of the time they do not have operating expenses so that they can't actually set rates based upon factual evidence. In Section 7, they have to speculate. But this is not the case here with the acquisition premium. The acquisition premium is based on past events. The original cost, less depreciation, is to be the net book value. We should know the original cost. We can figure out when the pipe was put into the ground and the depreciation. So there is no need to speculate.
So your answer to her is that you don't need ongoing operation evidence because that's not part of the determination of what's a net benefit?
Rate base is not an operational cost. That's correct. It's an
You're
established
saying, as
cost.
As I recall, am I recalling correctly, and I think counsel on the other side said, you submitted that evidence, which was not contested by anyone, that it was embedded.
That it is embedded. That's correct. We submitted that evidence.
Not conceded, it was certainly not contested.
The on JA 250, we submitted a spreadsheet that from the prior owner, which we believe supported that, and that alone should have caused FERC to move forward with reasoned analysis of the issue of acquisition premium. So they didn't do the reasoned analysis. And it's the pipeline's burden to show that. It's not FERC to say, oh, we don't have to do that. It's the pipeline's burden to actually prove those benefits.
Well, that's what they said with respect to the other two entities. The test was clear.
Exactly. And they applied it then.
They applied it.
That's right. One issue.
You don't think that on remand FERC could say it's just too hard to figure out what the acquisition premium is without knowing more, and that's why we put it off to Section 4?
Well, I don't think it was too hard in that we had testimony from the Missouri case saying that there was an acquisition premium that we submitted to FERC, and then we had documents, the spreadsheet that we included, again, from the prior owner that showed the plant acquisition premium.
And you're saying that was not contested?
It was not.
No. And
my colleague doesn't believe me. It's
not contested. Oh, I bet he does.
It's just as more helpful to have it come from you.
Well, the opposing counsel has already conceded it was not contested.
One important issue I would like to say is that ratepayers cannot be protected from FERC's inaction in this case unless the court remands. And we actually ask that the court vacate the orders based upon the fact that they're arbitrary and capricious.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.